Voices of the Temple, official podcast of the Temple of Witchcraft, exploring mystery and magic through love, will, and wisdom, hosted by Adam Sartwell.
Hi, listeners. Before I introduce who we are with today, I'd like just to get us into our spiritual place. So take a deep breath and bring yourself into the present moment as we call upon the Great Spirit. We call to the two who move as one through the three rays of love, will, and wisdom. We call upon the goddess, maiden, mother, and crone, past, present, and future, creator, sustainer, and destroyer, weaver of the web. We call to the God, Lord of light and Lord of darkness, God of the green and the gold, God of the horn and the red, singer of the song. Be with us now and forever, so mote it be.
So mote it be.
I am here with Storm Fairywolf. I know you've been a teacher for many, many years and all of the wonderful things that you've done, and I hope people are going to start checking you out because of it. But let's get into, how do you spiritually identify, and when did you recognize that about yourself?
So on most days, I identify as a warlock. Mm-hmm. And that is because I am a man who practices witchcraft. And because, people will ask me, well, why warlock specifically? Because that term has some negative etymological connotations,
mm-hmm.
Meaning an oath breaker or a deceiver. However, that is not what it means today. Today, if you look it up in the dictionary, it means a male witch. And so I grew up with that terminology. And so that just felt natural to me. Mm-hmm. And so it also gives me an opportunity to really delve into the divine masculine, within the context of the craft. And that's something that I personally feel really needs to be explored, along with obviously the divine feminine. However, it seems like there isn't much of a place for the divine masculine within the modern craft. And so this has been a prompt for me to adopt that terminology. Also, on a personal level, it gives me a little bit of what you might call gender euphoria. When I grew up in the 70s and 80s as a gay boy, I was often told I would never be a real man because I was gay. And so by using the term warlock, I'm also affirming my gender identity in a way that is in alignment with my spiritual identity.
That's interesting. Thank you.
Thank you.
I hope, people get that. I know for myself, I searched out when there was a wave of people who were turning towards warlock as a way to talk about their magic and their spiritual identity. And I was like, no, I feel, ever since I was a little kid, I felt better about witch than anything else. So, and having it not be gendered, but I see how that would be gender affirming and empowering in a way.
And certainly by me adopting that term for myself, I'm not making any claims for other people.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, oh, all male witches are actually warlocks. No, you are what you feel you are.
Yeah.
And so I know a lot of male witches who prefer witch.
Mm-hmm.
I sometimes will use witch. I did for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
I can use them interchangeably because I also feel like ultimately witch is a non-gendered word. However, witch also carries that cultural, I will say, baggage that is specifically rooted on the feminine.
Yeah.
And there's certainly nothing wrong with that at all. We need a lot more of the divine feminine, especially now. But I think also in order to fight the forces of toxic masculinity, we also need to really look at the divine masculine. And so for me personally, using the word warlock to describe myself, it's an avenue for me to kind of claim my space within that journey, of searching for the divine masculine and trying to bring that into a balanced space in the public.
Yeah. With the divine feminine, with the, with the public,
yeah,
with everyone who, has, every permutation of gender.
Absolutely. You know, we need all of it. It's all threads in the tapestry.
So, seeing how we're sort of talking about maleness at the moment, you've written a book called The Satyr's Kiss: Queer Men, Sex Magic, and Modern Witchcraft. How do you think the spiritual path of the witch that is a queer man, like anyone who's a queer man's experiencing that path, is different from maybe our straight allies or other LBTQIA plus? It was really hard to take the G out.
I feel that I'm obviously, I think we're all unique. And so on the spiritual path, I think we are looking for things that help us become more of who we already are, and helping us to discover who we are. I kind of feel like this is a lifetime of work, the old adage, know thyself, right? This is why we're here. And so the path for queer people is different from straight people in the sense that queer people don't have the cultural support, that straight people do. Straight people, as a rule, don't need to examine their sexuality because they're born into it and they have a whole culture that reinforces that. And so they never really have to look at it. They're never really asking themselves, oh, am I this? Am I that? Mostly it's unconscious. For queer people, we grew up in a society that is telling us that straight is the default and that everybody should be straight. And so we really come across these challenges, that straight people don't get challenged with in the same way. And this is a type, I feel this is a type of initiatic journey, and as with most good initiations, there is some sort of challenge. There's the ordeal that must be overcome. And I think for queer people, that first challenge is really recognizing that we are different than the mainstream, and obviously the same thing can be said about a lot of different types of people, neurodivergent people, as well, will end up coming to this challenge, that this discovery of the self that sets them apart from the mainstream. And I do feel like this is a very powerful space for the witch, for the warlock, for someone who's studying, or called to a spirit, an alternative spiritual path, if you will. But at the core, I think the journey is really the same. It's about self-discovery, and that's true for queer people, that's true for straight people. It's just we take a different route to get there.
And I think we have different initiations that we go through, like the coming out process is a mystery,
Oh, yeah.
and that it never really ends. You have to tell everyone,
Yeah, that's every
for the rest
day.
of your
People think,
life.
oh, you come out of the, when did you come out of the closet? It's like, well, what time is it? How much did I meet someone new today? Because that's part of it. Even to the degree of just living openly, I don't try to hide my sexuality, when I go to the grocery store or, whatever, I am who I am. I often feel that people can just see my gayness from space. And so I just kind of don't think about it anymore. But of course, early on, the first time I came out of the closet, that was huge, right? Even though so many people already knew or assumed, but still, for me to accept that in myself and to actually say it out loud, that was a type of initiation because you are stepping through a doorway of experience and you can never really go back. You could go to sleep and maybe pretend it didn't happen, but you still had that experience and it's still part of you. And so I do feel like we all have different types of initiations. And I tried to cover that a little bit too in the book, The Satyr's Kiss. One of the very first queer initiations I had was the first time I had sex with a man. And I will tell you that a lot of the cultural baggage and fear-mongering that had been projected onto me all those years prior came up in that moment. I remember myself thinking at the time, it's the first time I'm having sex with a man. I'm having a great time. I'm also very nervous. And it comes up into my head like, okay, well, if they're right, you're going to hell now. You've done it. I didn't stop. I kept doing what I was going to do, but I was like, okay, well, I've gone this far. And so, but that was, I had a moment where I could have been like, oh no, I better not do this. And I was like, no, I'm doing it anyway, So that's a type of initiation. You face your fears and you move through them. And oh, look, I didn't get struck by lightning.
Yeah. And I think there is a release of power too when you step across the taboos that, people put onto us, and we go, oh, I can do this, and it's
That's
okay.
actually okay. A lot of people, I like that you mentioned taboos because there's a lot of power in facing taboo and breaking taboo in the act of transgression. I also want to say to that, some things are taboo for a really good reason and
True.
should never be broken, right? And there's a lot of things on that list, but there's a lot of things that people will say are taboo that are just have nothing to do with anything, and so like adult queer people engaging in consensual sex with each other is not taboo.
No.
That is not, but if you feel it is taboo for you and yet you're a queer person, there's a lot of power in transgressing that. There's a lot of power in facing your fear. Just like when I was a kid and I'd be afraid of the closet monster, and my mom would make me get up out of bed without turning on the lights, and I'd have to walk across the room and reach out and touch it to then realize it's just my raincoat. And then it's like, oh, then I wasn't afraid of that ever again, because you face your fear, and then when you face it, you gather your power back from it, and you're stronger than you were before. And that's one of the initiatory experiences that I think a lot of queer people go through. Yeah, the first time you're having sex, the first time you go to a queer-only space, and you realize, oh, wow, I can let down my guard in this way. You didn't even know you had your guard up before. That I will say, that was my first experience going to Between the Worlds, which was a festival. They used to hold it in Ohio. I think they moved it.
Yeah, they moved to Pennsylvania, I believe.
Pennsylvania. Yeah, I haven't been in like 16 years, but I remember the first time that I went, by the next day, I was like, oh my God, I've never experienced anything like this before. And I had gone to like gay bars, but that was a different environment, right? But being here out in nature with other pagan men, queer men, and I realized, oh my gosh, when I go through life, I have all these shields up that I wasn't even consciously aware of. But here, I was able just to drop them. It was the most relaxing experience that I think I've had. And that was a type of initiatory experience because you experience this thing that you had not experienced before, and it changes you on some level. You
Yeah.
gain insight from it. And that's what I think a true initiation is all about. It's about helping to quicken your spiritual evolution, to expand your consciousness, your insight, your knowledge of self, So again, ultimately, I think the spiritual journey is roughly the same. It's all about self-exploration, but we are going to take vastly different routes to get there.
Yeah, I think when we think about the spiritual path, it doesn't always take the same path, if you will.
Right.
Or you'll go on your own way and experience different things, but each one gets you to the top of the mountain, and you go, oh, this is what I've experienced. This is more of me. And now I know.
And we might joke and say, oh, yeah, well, I took the scenic route, or whatever to get there. We might say that as a joke, usually to imply like, oh, you took some time off and went and did this other thing, but it's not time off.
No.
It literally is. That's the path you're supposed to be. There's no way to deviate from your path.
Yeah.
You're gonna get there. Everything is necessary on the journey toward there, right? It's the journey, not the destination. I hate to descend into cliches, but sometimes they're cliche for a reason.
Yeah. Oh, they give us ways to talk about mysteries that you can,
Absolutely.
really
Absolutely.
experience. So speaking of mysteries, with a capital M, what can only really be experienced as a queer man? I know that there are mysteries, and I just want to caveat this of like, there are mysteries that I will not experience in this lifetime, like giving birth. Not experience that because I'm a gay man. I won't know what it's like to, completely raise a child to adulthood. Like that kind of mystery is not for me at this time, in this lifetime. What do you think are some of the mysteries that we experience as gay men?
I mean, we certainly already talked about the sex aspect, you
Yeah.
know, and we could talk more about that. However, I really feel like one of the mysteries that queer people experience that straight people don't is we understand oppression in a different way. And, you know, not to make this a downer, you know, but, you know, I think there is a certain sensitivity that is inspired by having experienced oppression, having experienced being bullied. You know, growing up, I was like incessantly bullied, like all my life, you know, on the playground, really my entire life. And then, of course, then getting out of school, you think, okay, that's the end of it. And no, you're still, as a queer person, you're still bullied by the public, by the state, by the federal government, you know. And certainly things have been getting better, you know, in certain areas, you know, over the years. It's not linear. But I do think that that is kind of part of our story, our collective queer story, is we have been held down for so long in so many different ways. And so that gives us an opportunity to really do some self-examination and to hopefully that will inspire within us a greater sense of empathy, you know, for others who maybe are experiencing oppression, maybe in different ways. You know, I'm always amazed though that I always kind of feel like, you know, in my rational brain, all minorities should bind together, you know, and support one another. And yet that does not happen.
Wow.
And usually, you know, it's said that, you know, minorities will use the tools of the oppressor, you know, against themselves and each other. And I've certainly seen that is true. And I think that that's probably one of the reasons why one of my messages that I keep coming back to time and time again is we need to practice kindness, you know, that we need to practice empathy. And I think especially now politically, you know, where, you know, we're now given the phrase empathy is a sin, you know, and it's like, oh my God, how did we get here? Well, we got here because it was okay to demonize other people,
Yeah.
you know, and I think a lot of us who were bullied, we have basically two choices. We can become introspective and we can take that pain and examine it and work through it and then become more compassionate as a result and try to help other people. Or the easier route is just to simply become another bully. And I do feel like that's what's happened with a lot of us. And I'm not here to say, oh, I'm perfect at it. And I always have compassion for people because I, especially now, get very angry. And, you know, but I do try to temper that. I try to remember, hey, everybody, even Donald Trump is a human being who is worthy of compassion. And I know whenever I say that, I get groans from people, you know, and they're like, oh no, that's beyond the pale, right? They
Yeah.
can't. And I'm not telling other people, like, oh, you have to show him kindness or you have to show him
No.
compassion. I'm not telling other people to do it all. I'm telling myself what I expect of myself. And I do expect that I'm going to approach even Trump with compassion and empathy, and at the same time, stand wholeheartedly against pretty much everything that he's doing and everything that he stands for. There is a way to do that. It's really hard.
It is.
And that's what I aspire to. But I do feel like that's kind of what is needed, at least more of, you know, in life right now, is we need to stop demonizing people. Even people who are really acting like demons. You
Yeah.
know, we have to remember they are also a human being. That doesn't mean we give them a free pass. You know, that doesn't mean they shouldn't be brought to justice. That doesn't mean they shouldn't be in jail. You know, I think all those things are true. But we can't say, oh, well, he's not human. Because the minute we do that, we're actually hurting ourselves. We are allowing ourselves to become corrupted. We are allowing ourselves to become the demon that we hate. And I don't know, maybe it's selfish. I just love myself too much for that. I don't want to go there, you know. And so I could, don't get me wrong, I can get angry and I can get snarky. But ultimately, you know, I want to act from a space of kindness.
Yeah.
I have no idea if that answered your question. I think I went off on a tangent, but there you go.
That's okay. We'll move on. So
I heard that you are revising and expanding your book, The Witch's Name, Crafting Identities of Magical Power through Cross Crow Publishing. What can our listeners expect from this new edition and get excited about?
Well, I hope I'm excited about it. I loved this book, and I was at first very disappointed when my original publisher, Llewellyn, said they were discontinuing it and giving me the rights back to me. But then I immediately contacted Cross Crow, who has a good catalog of previous Llewellyn authors, I'll just say. And I contacted them, they jumped on it, they wanted to do a revised and expanded edition. And so what was interesting is the very things that I wanted to add to it, because of course, after you write a book, and I'm sure you've experienced this, Adam, you write
Oh
a
yeah.
book and then you're done, and then it's out there, and you're like, oh, I should have added this. Or I could have talked more about that. And but it's done, right? And so this is a good opportunity for me to add in some stuff that I felt like, oh, it could have gone there. And what was nice is that Cross Crow had the exact same ideas. They were like, so some of the things that I'm going to be touching on are, I'm going to be talking more about how to make magic words. I kind of riff off the old idea of the barbarous names, the barbarous words. And so how to make your own. I had one little exercise in there for that, but now there's going to be some more. And I'm talking more about choosing names, not just for yourself, but for perhaps a familiar, also coven names. Those are something that usually, we might come into a pre-existing coven, but let's say you're making a coven, you're starting a coven, you want to give it a name that has some power, that talks about what it is that the coven actually represents. Those are good things to think about, when you're starting a group, because it shapes the egregore, it shapes the spirit, the group mind. So those are some additions that I hope people will be as excited about it as I am. But I will admit I loved the original book, and because there were some things out there on the market about names in the craft, but they were usually dictionaries of names, which can be really helpful. I'm not getting down on that. But my book is not a dictionary of names. It's really about looking at yourself, riffing off the idea of the true name, from occult folklore, and trying to decide what type of energetic container fits my soul. And by taking on a magical name, in essence, we're casting a spell on ourselves to become something. We're aspiring towards certain qualities, or we want to reaffirm certain qualities, or we want to remind ourselves of certain intense spiritual experiences that we may have had. And so all of these can be a factor in determining a magical name. And I also make it very personal. I talk about my own journey having a weird public magical name, and some of the resistance, that I've received and still receive, about it. And how that even kind of factors in to the power, of the name. And also some different areas in which you might have multiple names, depending on what group you're in. So I feel like I cast a pretty wide net, when it comes to the whole concept. But I'm really excited about the revised edition, and I got my fingers crossed. We'll see how that does.
Awesome. So you teach multiple courses and traditions such as Black Rose Witchcraft Online Course, Modern Witch University, Reiki, the Anderson Fairy Tradition, and your own lineage of Blue Rose. Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about each one and what they could experience or learn with any of those?
Yeah, thank you. So Modern Witch University is our collective school. So I'm talking about, along with myself, my husband Chaz Bogan, and my partners Devin Hunter and Matt Oren. So we run Modern Witch University, and under that umbrella, we offer a lot of different magical courses. I offer a course in spiritual cleansing. There's a little course, little teeny little course on the witches' runes, but our big courses would be Black Rose Witchcraft, My husband also does a course in modern conjure. Black Rose Witchcraft, I would say that's our largest course. That is a, I'm going to put it in air quotes, a 13-month online course. I put that in air quotes because it can actually take you as long as you'd like. It really, you're working at your own pace. But how that works is, you would sign up for either pay for the whole thing up front and you save a little money, or you do a $35 a month subscription for 12 months. And then how that works is that every 7 days, a new lesson is unlocked. There's 52 lessons. And the final lesson being an initiation, which seeks to empower the person or to uncover their inner witch power. And this is given as a long distance trance journey. But over the course of this year or more, you're given written lessons. There's a lot of audio lessons, MP3, projects and rituals that people are supposed to do. And then we also have an optional private Discord server. So students and initiates can talk to one another and talk about their lives, talk about the work that they're doing. And that has been a pretty awesome course. It's actually will celebrate its 10th anniversary this summer. And we've had like 2,000 people, be part of the course, so far. And that's way beyond anything that we had ever even imagined, so it's pretty humbling also at the same time. I also, as you mentioned, teach Reiki. I'm a Reiki master teacher in a few different lineages, and I also do that online. Everything I do now is online because I am a homebody. After the pandemic, I was like, why am I not just staying home all the time? So here I am, staying home all the time and doing my work from home. But I love Reiki. I also feel that more witches and magical practitioners would really benefit from taking Reiki training. I can say also becoming a Reiki master teacher has made me a better witch, a better warlock, in the sense of being able to pass witchcraft initiations, because Reiki master teacher is kind of about that. It's all about passing this power and, awakening people to this power in this special ceremonial way. And the more you work with these things, the more you learn how it actually works, beyond the forms and beyond, the woo. And then, of course, you mentioned my Blue Rose Fairy lineage. And so that's also something that I offer through Modern Witch University. That is only open to people who have graduated from the Black Rose course, just because I want to make sure that people can do basic stuff first. I used to just take people off the street, so to speak. And whereas sometimes that was okay, a lot of times it wasn't. Fairy tradition training is a lot more personal, it's one-on-one. I don't do any like recordings, really for it. It's live one-on-one trances. So it takes up a lot more of my time. Whereas the Black Rose stuff is all automatic. I might not even talk to anybody in the Black Rose course until they petition for that initiation, right? That might be the first time that I'm talking to them. But with Blue Rose, I am talking to them at least like once a month, maybe more, So it's a lot more time intensive for me. But I love doing it. It's really my passion.
That's awesome. So, you have a podcast called Witch Power Daily. Which is all guided meditations. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, thank you. So I think that was a couple of years ago. My intention was to do like a season a year, and after I finished I don't know, season one, I was like, maybe I don't need to do any more for a while. But it's currently at 30 episodes. It was released on, weekdays, for 30 days. And each episode deals with a particular aspect of building a spiritual practice, or working with witchcraft in a certain way. And so we'll talk about, what the issue at hand is or the topic at hand. And then I will offer a guided meditation or a guided ritual or a guided spell, that people can perform along with me. And the idea is that they kind of stack, so we start very simply. Now it's just about the breath and how we're going to breathe. And then we're layering on, now it's grounding. And now we're going to introduce what we call soul alignment. And it goes on from there until finally at the end, it's kind of this kind of ritual of self beauty and acceptance. And so everything is kind of led up gradually along the way. So I will direct people to that podcast, especially if they are thinking about maybe working with me. Maybe they want to take Black Rose, or maybe they want to take Blue Rose. And I might have them listen to the podcast first, because first of all, if you're going to train with me, you have to be down with my voice. And if you're not, if you find my voice annoying, this is not going to work for you. You know, so maybe check it out on the podcast first. It's free, right? But also, I feel that that might be all that some people need. They might not need to pay for a course, you know, to work with me live. Maybe they're going to get everything they need from this free podcast, right? And so I like to put stuff out there that is free for people, because I know, you know, times are hard, you know, and I'm doing this for the spiritual love. Yes, I'm trying to also make a living at it, but this really is my spiritual calling. And so part of that is that I try to make a lot of stuff available for free to the public as well.
That's good. So what technique in your personal practice is helping you right now?
Right now, and really honestly, for always, I feel like this is a boring answer, but it is soul alignment. And when I'm talking about soul alignment, for the your listeners who might not be familiar with the system, in fairy and some other systems, there's this idea of that we have three souls or three parts to the soul. And so soul alignment is all about communing with them individually and then bringing them into a space of alignment, of deeper communication. And for me, that is so foundational. You know, it is a type of grounding experience. You know, it is about becoming conscious in the present moment, but conscious of all of our parts. You know, not only my talker, my personality, my waking consciousness, but also my primal consciousness. You know, our subconscious, our transcendent divine consciousness, quote unquote, higher self. Bringing all three of these into alignment is really what sets the stage, in my opinion, for the spiritual experience or the magical experience. Anything else that we're going to do, if we're working with spirits, you know, if we're doing healing work, whatever it is, it really, in my mind, comes from a space of alignment. So even though this is such a, it's such a foundational thing, it's one of the things that we teach super early on, you know, in both Black Rose and Blue Rose, and yet I keep coming back to those basic techniques over and over and over again, because they are so useful. And if we don't have mastery in them, then we're really not going to get mastery in anything else. It really is like the foundation of our house. And if that is not sound, everything else crumbles, right? You might have a beautiful attic, but it's not going to stay there long if your foundation is crumbling, right? So those basic exercises, I keep finding a renewed love and interest in.
That's awesome. Thank you. So what advice, either that you've been given or has come to you, do you think would be helpful for the community?
I mean, I did talk a little bit briefly earlier about kindness, right? I do feel like that's something we need to really kind of focus on, compassion and kindness. I once heard somebody say, talking specifically about the fairy tradition, of course, saying that compassion has no place in fairy, which I take big exception to. I think that compassion is the foundation for everything, right? And I kind of feel like when we do that soul alignment, it is also about compassion. First, compassion for ourselves and all of our parts, but then being able to extend that out. But I think as to give a little slightly different answer, there is something I think that all of us could do that would make things a little better for all of us, and that is to embrace silly. You know, I think that silly is a superpower because it is transgressive. You know, it breaks things down. When we get too serious about things, I feel like everything becomes dark and everything becomes foreboding. And in the face of darkness, we need levity. You know, we need light. And so I'm often thinking of that phrase. I want to say it's attributed to the late Lady Circe, but maybe one of your readers, if they know better, they could let me know that I'm wrong. But I believe it was her that said, "If you would walk the witch's way,
Never
observe
mind
with
the child's
care the
life.
child at play." Right. And so I feel that That is so important. You know, children have the starry-eyed wonder. They believe in magic, right? It's us adults that get jaded. And then once we don't believe in magic, there is no magic in the world because we're not able to see it, right? And I will say, I do feel like that's kind of one of my superpowers. You know, people have accused me of, you know, being, you know, having Peter Pan syndrome. You know, I'm 54 years old, you know, whatever, and I still feel like a silly kid. And I kind of hope that never goes away. And but I do think that that's magical. And part of it is making comfort with the idea of being seen anyway as silly, you know, with a name like Storm Fairy Wolf. You know, I kind of feel like I'm halfway there, you know, but that, and that's part of it too, is that I recognize that some people would look at that name and be like, oh my God, that's ridiculous, right? Well, sure, it can be ridiculous. There's power in that. If I'm embracing the silliness, then maybe I don't give an F what other people are thinking about me or saying about me, you know, or whatever. Or I'm going to turn that around and turn it into something positive. Literally, we talked about my book, The Witch's Name, earlier. The reason I wrote that book is because someone was mean to me on the internet about my name. And I thought, I'm going to turn this into a book, you know? And so I did. So, you know, but part of that, even that reaction was kind of silly. You know, it's fun. It's, you know, there's a levity to it. And I think that that's something we need to collectively embrace. You know, we need to be okay with being silly. And come on, if we're in the witchcraft and pagan movement, it's effing ridiculous. I mean, you know, you have like naked people dancing around in a circle, you know, in their living room. It's absurd, but it's also powerful. You know, to say that it's silly and absurd isn't to take its power away. Quite the contrary. It flies in the face of convention. And that is a transgressive act. And we've already talked about how the power of transgression is so powerful. You know, when you stand up to the powers that be that you need to act this way, you can only, you know, be this way in these certain circumstances, blah, blah, blah. And already queer people are like, you know, hold my boa, you know, whatever. So again, I'll wrap that back into what an earlier question, you know, you had about queer people being on a different spiritual path than straight people. I do feel like silliness is kind of part of our cultural DNA. I mean, then thinking about like at the Stonewall riots, you know, how, you know, yeah, it was terrible. And, you know, it was a big riot and the police were raiding people. And then we got a bunch of queers in the streets doing a line kick dance, taunting the police with a silly little rhyme, you know, whatever. And, you know, there's power in that to stand up to oppressive forces that seem really daunting and we're without hope. But we can approach that with humor. You know, I think one of the best ways to take down a dictator is to show how effing ridiculous they are, right? And that's why I love making fun of Trump and Elon Musk so much. I think that's really necessary. That's part of my spiritual path, is continuing to just make fun of them because they're absurd. Yes, they're dangerous. Yes, they're idiots. Yes, you know, they're racist, all the things. It's terrible. But, you know, they're ridiculous. And I think that once that really is exposed, they start losing their power base because they're so narcissistic, they can't handle people laughing at them, really, you know. So laughter is very powerful. So let's all get silly together, you know, for the sake of democracy. Let us be silly.
So, where can our listeners find your work and especially the new fairy doors that you've been producing if they're
Oh,
interested?
thank you. You could always go to my website, fairywolf.com. That's Fairy wolf.com. And from there, you can find links to all of my projects, you know, to the podcast, to my books. But also to our store, or you can go there directly, daturatrading.com, datura like the flower. And that's really where we sell the fairy doors. We also have an Etsy store. If you're into Etsy, you can find us, Datura Trading. And then, of course, modernwitchuniversity.com. You can go there and see all the different classes, you know, that we're offering, and get some more information about who I am and what I do. So there's a lot of stuff out there on the web. You can find me on social media. As much as I begrudgingly, I will use social media, but it's a love-hate relationship, right? So, but yeah, so I would say go to fairywolf.com. Everything is linked there. And certainly, if anybody has any questions, I'm pretty accessible. You could always get a hold of me, especially like on Blue Sky. If you send me a message on Facebook, let me know what the message is. Don't just say hi. How are you doing? I'm going to ignore those. I get a lot of those. I don't know what that is. But if you have an actual question, ask me the question immediately. Otherwise, I'm going to ignore it. But
I find with Facebook I will go, thank you for sending me a message, but if you want to really get to me, here's how to get it. Like I'll give them like here's how to email me at the temple.
yeah,
Like
on my website, I have a contact page, and there's a whole thing that's just like, consider this,
yeah.
all of these things, because I get all these messages, and I do try to actually get back to people. But if
Yeah.
it's just like, hey, bro, what's up? And I'm like, first of all, I think you're a bot. You're either a bot or you're on the wrong app. This should be like Grindr or Scruff, and this is Facebook, okay? This is not the time or place. But yeah, just get to the point. But or just go to my website, and there's like the contact page, and it will tell you exactly, what you need to do. But I do try to get back to everybody if they have questions. But I also am very likely ADHD, so keep that in mind as well. I have a lot going on. I'm self-employed. I'm in a polyamorous relationship with three other people, but there's a lot going on. Okay, so maybe I won't get back to you in the first 24 hours. Just that's okay though, right? We're all in this together.
All right. Well, thank you for being on the podcast. I'm gonna devoke our space and we can say goodbye to the listeners.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I've really appreciated it. It's been a lot of fun. It's good to see you again.
It's good to see you. So, we thank the Great Spirit and the two who move as one. We thank the three rays of love, will, and wisdom. We thank the Lord and Lady who move through us and work with us. May we recognize your presence in our lives. Blessed be. Merry meet, merry part, and merry meet again.
Blessed
Bye,
be.
listeners.
You've been listening to Voices of the Temple. The contents of this podcast are copyright 2010 of the Temple of Witchcraft. For more information, please visit templeofwitchcraft.org.